Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Urio. We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love the most. Each episode, we're going to bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows that you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guest will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows. But for this episode, we don't have a guest. Instead, we're going to do something a little bit different. So, Brandi, you and I, we've had many of these conversations. We've recorded many episodes. In fact, most of the season has now been recorded. We have maybe a couple episodes left, a couple guests, and our finale. But we've done a lot, and I think we've noticed that there's been a lot of white shows that we've talked about.
A lot of white shows. And, you know, that's for probably a really big reason, is because white shows are the shows that usually get made.
Yeah, for a long time, until probably very recently. I mean, we're not going to say that there's never been, you know, shows created by folks of color on the air. That's clearly not true. But the vast majority of shows that make it to air are created by white folks, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we mean. The shows that we've been talking about are a majority created by white people, to the tune of, I actually crunched some numbers here. So we've talked about, I've counted well over 100 shows between OMO shows and Criteria shows. And of those, only about 17% have been shows that were created by creators of color or people of color.
Wow.
That's not great. That's not good.
No.
That's not what you want. So what we wanted to do today is recognize that, and recognize that there's a ton of shows that haven't been brought up that we love to talk about. So yeah, so we want to do what we can to rectify that at least a little bit, and do something a little bit different this episode.
Yeah. So for this episode, we are each putting together a new criteria. And that criteria is going to consist of shows created by people of color or featuring casts that are predominantly people of color. And that can be like an and or, but like, let's be real. Like if there's a predominantly like people of color cast, there's probably a people of color creator. But there are some instances where that's not the case, and we will definitely get into that. So first up, Dan, let's talk about shows that almost made our criteria, but didn't quite make it. So, you know, they're not quite our BFFs, but like, they're definitely like pretty close friends. What's your first almost show?
The first almost show that I want to bring up is one that we've actually talked about before on the podcast. So, honestly, it's a show that could probably and should probably make both of our criteria. Mm-hmm. But we've decided, because it was in the criteria episode we did originally, this show was on your criteria. So we're going to make some space for some other shows to talk about. But Chappelle's Show is absolutely on my almost list. Would be on my criteria list if we haven't already gone deep into that show, for sure.
Yeah, it was one of my forever shows. I still stand by it. Like, you know, we always say that our criteria are a moment in time.
Right.
Guess what? No matter what moment it is, Chappelle's Show is on my forever list. So,
but not today.
But not to, except not today.
Except not today. Again, this is a very special episode.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately, like, and even that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, to be honest, like labeling this a very special episode, because that shouldn't be the case. But
no, but we have also set up a very stringent criteria as far as the rules go. So not every show can make our list.
That's right.
But right, it shouldn't be a very special episode, because it's not very special that people of color make TV. It's quite normal.
That's right.
Speaking as a person of color myself,
who makes TV. Exactly. It is quite normal. So that said, what's on your almost list? We can kind of go back and forth here, I think, because we might have some crossover.
Yeah. So my almost list, In Living Color, was one of my absolute favorite shows growing up. It was my parents and I, my brother, we all watched it together. It was a family affair. It came on Sunday nights, and it was so funny. And it was also at a time, I feel like, in pop culture and on TV where there was a lot of black programming. Like that was kind of the height of TGIF with Family Matters and Cosby Show. Different world, like there's it Living Single. It just felt like and Fox especially was showing a lot of I feel like a lot of black shows, like Martin. Do we remember Martin? Which Martin could have possibly been on my almost list because I'd watched a lot of Martin. But I love sketch comedy, and Living Color was probably like my introduction to sketch comedy. It's like obviously I knew about SNL and I watched stuff like that, but like in Living Color I thought it was just the funniest thing ever. The Wayans brothers are amazing. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker is classic. Classic film. Formative my childhood.
Yeah, it really can't be a criteria of color without mentioning the Wayans brothers or the Wayans family in general. You know, they've created so much incredible content, a lot of films, but in the TV category, In Living Color is absolutely probably the top of that list, I would say.
What else is up for you?
Well, you just mentioned one, and we can kind of like continue in this nostalgia category. Family Matters was on my almost list.
Mine too.
I grew up watching that show, like you said, part of TGIF. I loved that show. It like there were a lot of like TV households that we kind of grew up watching, right? Like, and the two households that I remember most clearly were the Full House and the Family Matters house, and especially like the Family Matters house, and then like Urkel's basement. Like, they just had like really fun sets, I feel. I don't know. I love that show. I love the storylines. I love the characters, Urkel and then Urkel. Like, no, it was Stephen and Stefan.
Stefan.
Stephen and
Stefan.
Stefan. I loved all of that. I loved the romance or attempted romance between him and Laura. I loved,
Harriet, Carl,
yes, Carl. What was the son's name? I'm blanking.
Eddie.
Eddie, of course. Eddie and his goofy friends. Like, it was just a
Oh, I forgot about
solid.
Eddie's goofy friend.
Yeah, it was just such a solid show and a great cast. I loved it.
My other almost shows are kind of all a little bit newer, even though like I have like okay, let's get it under control. Like Living Single, A Different World. These are all shows that I loved. But a show that I really wanted to put is a show that I really have grown to love. I think it just finished its second season. Is on board to do a third. But Black Lady Sketch Show.
Oh,
I just think is
yeah.
so funny. It's so good. It's Robin Thede. She's great. She's assembled like a stellar cast. What I love most about the show is that like it's kind of really weird.
Yeah.
And I love how weird it is because like it's black ladies being weird and it's like, yeah, guess what? Weird ass white comedians, we can be fucking weird too. Okay? This is how we do weird.
Yeah.
And it's actually funnier than how you do weird. So, thanks. And what I really love about it is that as a black woman, there are so many jokes that are just for me. And anybody watching it will laugh because it's funny, but like, I get it. And I love that. Like this one sketch where the kid from Blackish, the little daughter who like is a media mogul, like she also did the movie Little. She's like I can't remember her name right now, but she's doing things. She's pretty awesome. She's in the sketch, and Natasha Kelly from Insecure is in the sketch, and she's the mom, and it's like a game show to see if mom says that she's gonna have to go get her belt.
Welcome back to Get the Belt, voted 1992's favorite mother versus child competition show. I'm Kimber Zach.
And I'm Carmen Sipp. Tonight we've got two dynamic contestants going head to head.
Hand me the remote.
Oh, an absolutely brilliant opening move from Tonisha. That remote is clearly well within her own reach. She's using a frustration tactic to get Rhaenys to show some attitude, which would, of course, lead to an immediate beat and defeat.
As we know, many things can lead to a spank out, including showing disrespect, raising your voice, or being told to fix your face.
Anyway, it's an amazing sketch, and I love that show. And then another show that I love, the creator of this show, because she's also done other shows I thought was really amazing, but Michaela Cole, Chewing Gum.
Oh, yeah. I never saw this.
Just so weird. It's just such a weird show, but like, it's, you can't stop watching. It's really good. It's, she plays like this 15-year-old girl who lives in like, I guess like the housing projects of London. That doesn't matter. Like, it's not a story about like, oh my gosh, this is so sad. She got pregnant and she's on crack, you know, like, right. But like, I think it just matters in terms of like, that's the setting.
Yeah.
She's from a very deeply, deeply religious household, and all she wants to do is lose her virginity. And it's basically like hijinks ensue. Right. And it's just, it's a weird show. It's like, it looks really cool. Like,
I got to check that out.
It's on Netflix.
I am a Michaela Cole fan. I have a feeling we'll be mentioning one of her other shows in a bit here once we get into the criteria. Mm-hmm. But I love shows that feel like they come from like someone's singular vision. I have a couple more on my, yeah. One of which kind of fits that bill. It's a new show, only one season, which is why it's not on a criteria, but this is kind of a watch this space sort of show, because mm-hmm. I think it's really, really promising. It's Awkwafina is Nora from Queens.
It's really good.
It's really good. It's a Comedy mm-hmm. Central show starring Awkwafina as Nora from Queens. And it's, you know, she's kind of like in her, I believe, early 30s in the show, but like really mm-hmm. kind of hasn't found her way. So it kind of has like a lot of sort of millennial dread kind of infused into it. But kind of like you're talking about with Black Lady Sketch Show, it's like, it's a show featuring a predominantly Asian cast. Bowen Yang has a role as Awkwafina's cousin, I believe. BD mm-hmm. Wong plays her dad mm-hmm. In a really great role. And it's just, you know, it just feels like a show about people and a family living a life in Queens, and they happen to be Asian, right? And I think those are the mm-hmm. sorts of shows that we're seeing more and more now of, it's like, it's not like, oh, watch because this person mm-hmm. is so-and-so nationality and therefore it's going to be like this. It's just a show about people, you know?
And honestly, that's what diversity should mean within entertainment. It's not that like, this is a Black story. It's like, no, you're seeing a story and the people in it are Black or are Asian or are Latinx or are, you know.
Right. Or are Native, right? Like a show that's not on my list, but I want to check out, like Rutherford Falls.
Yeah.
Right. Like things like that is what we need more of and what we want to talk about. And then I have one more show on my list. Mm-hmm. Didn't make it into criteria because I think it's a mini series. So there's only a limited amount of it. It's also just a really tough watch, but I think an mm-hmm. important watch. If you don't know this story, it's When They See Us, which is Ava DuVernay's drama about the Exonerated Five, formerly known as the Central Park Five, who were unjustly imprisoned for a crime back in was it late 80s, early 90s?
Late 80s
in New York City that got a ton of media attention. If you don't know about it, look into it. But just a really, really well done portrayal of that story. So probably in the conversation for best. Mm-hmm. Like it was very, very moving, very, very tough to watch, but I felt like the sort of thing that also people need to watch more, because I think that's another important part of this is, unfortunately, we don't learn enough about the history of racism in America in school. Mm-hmm. So we need to sometimes lean on entertainment to do that. And this is a really good example of that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have not seen it not because I don't think that it's amazing, but it's just like, I just know it's going to be a tough watch. I'm just going to be so mad. And
yeah.
Sometimes that's tough for me. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So Dan, those are our almost shows.
This is a solid almost list.
But yeah.
Let's get to the criteria. If you're new to the show and haven't experienced the criteria yet, welcome. Thanks for coming. A little refresher on what exactly is the BFF criteria. So BFF stands for your best, favorite, and forever shows. We mentioned we're each going to choose two shows in each category. So your best shows are the ones that we think are the most artistic or well executed, just overall the best made shows you've seen. The favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart, mean something to you personally. And for the forever category, if you died tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get two shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are those shows?
And there are a few rules. For each category, we're choosing from the three overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. With unscripted meaning everything from reality shows to doc series. And there must be multiple episodes, so no one-offs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And obviously, as we have said many, many times before, there is no such thing as guilty pleasures. We want to hear it all. TV, all TV is great TV. I mean, okay, that's not true, but that's, you know what true. I mean.
But if you love it, let's talk about it. There's no shame love it, let's talk about it. In any pick that you have.
Yeah, but there are some bad shows, so like, watch out. The only other rule is that you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, the other pick has to be either unscripted or drama. So let's talk about some shows by some creators of color, Dan.
Yes. So just one point of order before we get into this, because so a little behind the curtain, as we sometimes do. So we did share the shows that will be on this criteria with each other. We didn't share the placement of them, but there are a couple that are on both of our lists. So I think, what do you think? Let's start with our best, as we always do. Mm-hmm. But if something comes up sooner, like say, you know, there's a show on my best that's in your forever, we'll talk about it at the same time and just kind okay. of like notch that in. So this criteria might be a touch out of order from what you're used to, but we're just kind of go show by show and see where they place.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, Dan, what's your first best show?
My first best show I hinted at, so I'll bring this one up first. It's a Michaela Cole show that is very recent, was just on HBO in the last year or so. It's called I May Destroy You.
Oh, that was on my almost list.
Okay. Yes. It touches on a couple of things we mentioned, right? It is another tough watch. Mm-hmm. It stretches. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated it because it exposed me to or let me in on, I think, some topics and themes that I'm just not used to thinking about all the time, right? Like mm-hmm. the big inciting incident, and this isn't a big spoiler, it's what the whole show was about. But Michaela Cole plays a writer, a novelist. After her first book has been a success, she's writing her second book and is under the pressure. She goes out one night to a club with her friends and she's assaulted. She's raped in the bathroom of a club and she's roofied. She doesn't remember what happened. And the show is basically her journey to kind of recollect and figure out and reckon with and deal with and heal from that trauma. And that sounds really heavy, and it is. And what I think this show and what it did so well and why it's in my best category is it didn't feel, you didn't feel that way. I'm mm-hmm. not saying this right. You did feel that way, but it also was like entertaining. It was a fun mm-hmm. show about assault and trauma, which you shouldn't be able to say, but that's what Michaela Cole did. And that's why it's in my best list.
It's honestly a testament to just how talented she is that you can take that kind of subject matter and
yeah.
Because full disclosure, I have seen up to episode 8. I still haven't seen the last two yet, but I will be watching it. It's just like, I just haven't watched it yet. And only because A, like, I really like the show and like, don't really want it to be done. But like, B, like, I know that it could possibly be like a tough watch and I'm trying to steel myself for it. So.
Right. It's the finale, and I'm going to tread lightly here because I don't want to spoil it for you and for our listeners as well. Like I said, it's a newer show. If you haven't caught it yet, you should absolutely check it out.
HBO Max.
Yeah, one season on HBO Max. Yeah, I don't know how much to say about the finale other than it kind of blew my mind. It just feels like it closed the story in a perfect way, in a very unexpected way, in a way that kind of messed with your perceived notions of how episodes and how storytelling should work and how the stories that we tell ourselves work and kind of the thought process and the, you know, like if you're confronted with a problem, right, you're going to go like, if I do it this way, maybe this happens. If I approach it this way, maybe this happens. If it happens this way, maybe this happens. So it somehow touches on all of that. And just like this kind of like revelatory episode of TV that's when I was done watching it, I remember thinking I've never seen anything like that before. And I'm not sure when I'm going to see anything like that again. It was just singular is the word that I used to describe that finale and that show in general. So I May Destroy You.
Dan, you just like sold that ish. Like sold in the room to this guy. Yes.
Yeah, I May Destroy You. So Brandy, what is your first entry in the best category?
My first entry in the best category is also a show by an incredible Black woman creator. Her name is Issa Rae and the show is Insecure. It is so good. Everything about it is so good. I love the clothes. Yes, I bought the Harriet Tubman sweatshirt she was wearing. Yes, I constantly Google like Issa Rae Insecure episode whatever, like what was she wearing, because I want to buy it. Like, where do I even start with the show? Number one, I love that this is a show about female friendships. And as we talked about in my criteria, one of my best shows was Broad City. And one of the things that I love about it is like just showing friendship in such a real way. And Insecure really does that. And what they grappled with this season was that, you know, sometimes you grow out of friends. And that's tough, because you think when you meet some, you know, you're best friends with somebody and you're like 16, 17 years old, like you guys are going to be best friends forever. Obviously, right. Obviously you go through your 20s together, you go through some shit. And you're like, obviously, like this is my person. But like something happens around 31, 32. And like people grow up, they change. And the way that they dealt with Molly and Issa's friendship in this season was, it was so good. Because like, they're also just like really great actresses and should get like all the awards. Like they, because neither one of them is in the right, but they both think they're right. And like, they do such a great, like both of them are wrong and right for different reasons. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, you know what, Issa, like sometimes like you're not a good friend. You are really selfish. And it's like, you know what, Molly, sometimes like you are kind of a piece of shit and like think that you know it all. Like, and that's right. that's not a great color on anybody.
Yeah.
You know,
before you go too much further, I will say, so Insecure was on my almost list as well. And I didn't mention mm-hmm. it because I knew it was going to be on your criteria. Mm-hmm. Love the show. I think you mentioned this in a previous episode. I love it because it just feels like a show about people who happen to be Black. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just like really relatable stories, like you mentioned, you know, as someone who has just got through their early 30s, now in their mid 30s, like it resonates on all of those levels about changing friendships and changing life circumstances and kind of being on that bridge of, oh God, those 20s were something, huh? What did I learn? Maybe not much. Maybe should have learned more. Like, how do I take that with me and grow up? But it's not on my criteria. Again, this is a moment in time list. These mm-hmm. things can change and, you know, shows may move. Insecure is on my almost list because I'm not caught up. I watched the first three seasons. I haven't seen season four, the one you're talking about right now. But I know they're coming back for season five, which I believe is their last season. Mm-hmm. So at the conclusion of Insecure season five, I have a feeling it's going to be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Really, really strong show. And I love that you picked it.
Yeah, no, season four is really good. I know LA, but I don't know LA. I've been there a few times, but I feel like LA is such a crucial and integral part of the show. And I feel like I'm learning LA through the show. It's like kind of like Sex in the City. It's like, and I feel like I've heard it described as such too. It's like, oh, it's like Sex in the City, but with Black people, or Sex in the City in LA with Black people. And it's like, kind of, but like, whereas in Sex in the City, Charlotte, Carrie, Miranda, and Samantha were all like kind of specific archetypes. I don't feel that with Issa and her friends.
And I also feel like that's kind of a lazy thing. And to be honest, and I've done it before, but right? Like, oh, it's the Black this. Or whatever. And I think I did it on a podcast with Tracy. I mentioned the Boondocks. It's like, oh, is that kind of like the Black South Park, right? So that mm-hmm. happens. Doesn't mm-hmm. make it right. But I think the show is much more than that. But I think you're right about the LA of it all. Like, to mm-hmm. me, it reminds me more of like the Broad City of it all, where it's just like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, this place is a very well-drawn environment with which these characters interact in very meaningful, interesting ways that lets me learn a little bit more about this city that I might not know super well.
Yeah, it's like Insecure is LA. Like LA is a part of the fabric of the show. And I just, I really love that. So yeah, so my first best pick is Insecure. Oh my God, I'm like her raps.
Oh my God, I know.
Like her raps, like.
Love Rookie. She give them all the cookies, but cookies on me pussy. This girl is kind of loosey. Dudes take her off the shelf and they put her on credit. 30 days later, they return it and regret it. Used like a dish rag, dumped with a hashtag. I blame it on the pussy. That shit must be bad. Broken pussy. Broken pussy. Broken pussy.
Hey. Dan, what's your second best show?
Two strong picks right out the gate. I love it. I wonder if this next one is our first crossover. Let's see.
Okay.
My second best show is Atlanta.
That, Dan, that's my second best show.
Oh, shit. That's awesome. All right. Sweet. I was hoping this was going to happen. I kind of had a feeling. It's like, amazing. It's Atlanta. So, like, yeah. It was going to be up. It's in this neck of the woods.
Yeah. It, like, probably wasn't going to be a forever.
Right. There's not enough episodes for forever. So, it's probably going to be
have been a favorite.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. Okay.
So, but best. I mean, it's so.
I mean,
genius. Every part of it is genius.
Yeah. It's. I'm kind of at a loss for words because, again, this is one of the shows that so many people have talked so in such depth about why it's so good. But like, a singular vision from the mind of Donald Glover, and you feel that the absurdist flourishes, the performances are incredible. It feels so lived in. It
also feels like beyond definition.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I knew like Insecure and Atlanta were always in the conversation for me, but I was like, Insecure, like 100% a comedy. Like there's some drama there, but I was like, but if you just to look at the show on its face, it's a comedy. Right. Atlanta, I was like, is it a drama?
Two words, Teddy Perkins.
Don't eat, Dan.
That's a drama.
Even. I have it written down.
That's a drama.
It's still one of the scariest things I've ever seen. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, there is an episode of Atlanta. I want to say, is it season two, episode six?
It's season two. I'm not sure the exact episode, but season two, that's right.
Well, it's called Teddy Perkins. And it's one of those things where you actually don't have to see another episode of Atlanta. You could jump right into this one if you want to be afraid for the rest of your life. It's so scary. Like, yeah. I don't even know how to describe it. Well, let's set the stage for listeners who may not know what Atlanta is, like what the show is about. Right. So we've said that it kind of defies definition.
Right. To jump in real quick. So you have it on your list as a drama next to Insecure, a comedy. Mm-hmm. I have I May Destroy You as my drama, although it could be considered a comedy. Both of mine could go either way. So I think together they make one drama and one comedy, which is which on any given day depends on the day, depends on the episode. But right now I think it's I May Destroy You as drama, Atlanta is comedy for me.
Interesting, because I definitely see it both ways. But so Atlanta is from the mind of Donald Glover. He plays a guy named Earn, who is what, like late 20s, early 30s?
Late 20s, I'd say.
Yeah. And he's like, you kind of start the show out thinking that this is just going to kind of be about this guy who like kind of like doesn't have a shit together, still living with his parents, like has a girlfriend and also, oh wait, a kid. And you kind of think that's what it's going to be. And then you meet his cousin who is a rapper named Paperboy. Mm-hmm. Paperboy's amazing best friend. Named Darius.
Yeah. And by the way, both played by incredible actors. Paperboy played by Brian Tyree Henry, and Darius played by
Lakeith Stanfield. And the show like kind of follows the misadventures of these three, would you say? But you just literally every episode, you never know what you're going to get. Like there's one whole episode that it's as if it's on a TV news channel. And you're watching like this news magazine interview with Paperboy.
BAN, yeah.
And there's fake commercials.
Yeah, BAN. It's a whole satire. The whole episode is a satire about like kind of sending up like BET, kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
But like, it's like Paperboy is a guest on The Montague Show on BAN, which probably stands for what, like the Black American
Network? Black American Network.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's fake commercials. Like you really see in that episode, you see Donald Glover's like, oh yeah, he was a writer on 30 Rock. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he came up doing sketch comedy with Derek Comedy. Like you see some of his kind of early work or early inspirations in that. But that's just one episode of this incredible tapestry, right? Like I'm thinking of the van episode in season one, Value, where this van is Earn's on again, off again girlfriend, the mother of their shared child's, played by Zazie Beetz, who's great, but like you get a whole episode from her perspective, and you know, I believe she's a teacher, an educator, a counselor in a school, and she has to drug test episode, and she's like trying to like squeeze the piss from her daughter's diaper into a whole thing, but like the show isn't afraid to like stick with a character for an episode, right? You have like Paperboy episodes like Woods, where he kind of gets lost in the woods and has a series of misfortune events. And that, like, that's a dramatic episode. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of a scary episode. The Teddy Perkins kind of one-off. The North of the Border, where they Paperboy has a show at like a college and they end up at this weird frat house. Then, you know, like this kind of like a road trip episode.
Yeah. And then like there's another episode where it's like, I would say more typical like sitcom-y, where, you know, he is going to take his girlfriend out to dinner, knowing that he doesn't really have that much money on his debit card.
Right.
And it's kind of like this comedy of errors of him trying to like not like get expensive stuff, but like not let her know that he's getting expensive stuff, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And I love that in the way that Insecure really utilizes LA, Atlanta like truly shows all the facets of Atlanta. So for those who don't know, I'm from Metro Atlanta. I'm from a town called McDonough. It's 30 miles south of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I didn't spend a ton of time in Atlanta as like growing up in terms of like hanging out there, but I spent a lot of time there in my 20s. My mom always worked in Atlanta. So it's like, it was always like kind of like the big city.
Yeah.
What I love is that like, it's really hard to define Atlanta, mm-hmm. and the show like really captures that nebulousness. Like the episode that I was talking about before with where Earn took Van out to dinner and like couldn't really afford it. They have to find a parking space, and parking in Atlanta is always like, it's notoriously difficult. And there's just this guy sitting in the parking lot who decides he's the parking attendant. And this guy's accent is so... It was so good. Like, he definitely, like, I don't think he was an actor. I think he just must have been somebody that they just found. And they were like, so you're going to do this part right now. Just say this. Right. Because, like, his accent was so on point.
I see. Perfect.
Wait here?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Come on. It'll be fun.
Oh,
there we go.
No, I don't know.
Why don't you go ahead and park it right here, Youngblood? No, you're fine at midnight.
You guys close at midnight?
No, sir. Street gang. They like to come out at around 11, vandalize the cars and jawride them.
Not a large cop presence around here, huh?
Well, no, but the towing company. But don't worry about getting towed, but like I said, I'm out here. You see these five cars right here? These my people. And if you eating over there at that restaurant over there, I'll come over and let you know if you got to move real quick.
Okay, I'm sorry, but, like, what kind of a parking lot is this? Because this seems janky as hell.
How much is it?
$10.
That's how much the valet costs.
Well, $8.
Oh, Earn, you're taking my car to valet right now. I'm sorry. This is ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Well, $6.
Good night. I'm
sorry. Come on, now. Hey, we all we got. Hey, come on.
$6 isn't bad.
Each episode feels distinct, but I don't know. It all perfectly kind of fits together and has such a great sense of place. And season two with like the premiere Alligator Man with Cat Williams.
Yes.
And that introduces like a gun that will then, it's like the longest Chekhov's gun payoff I've ever seen. And then like in the finale, I won't tell you how it pays off, but it does in a huge way. It's like, as much as you have these one-off episodes, it's clearly part of a larger plan, a larger vision, a larger tapestry, like I've said before. And it's for that reason, I think, again, it's one of the best shows I've ever seen. It's in my best.
It's so incredibly well made. Everybody, like, amazing casting. Yeah, so Atlanta, Donald Glover, creative genius.
Yeah, a super deserving shared best show.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so off to a strong start in this criteria, Brandy. Gotta say, so far we share Atlanta as the best pick. We also have I May Destroy You and Insecure in the mix. Mm-hmm. Great stuff so far. What is your first favorite show in your criteria of color?
My first favorite show in my criteria of color is a little show called Key and Peele.
Ooh, okay. This is also on my criteria.
Okay.
It's my forever show.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I mean, that's a great, you know, I can see that. Like, I always knew that Key and Peele was going to figure into my criteria. I didn't know whether it was going to be favorite or forever. And right. I decided on favorite because there's something else that I had to pick as forever.
Okay.
Which we'll discuss. Key and Peele is just so funny. And for a lot of the reasons that I love Chappelle's show, I loved Key and Peele, which is that I feel like they did a really great job of taking the Black experience and sketchifying it.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, both Key and Peele, I think, are both biracial, but obviously like identify as Black men. But They're so fun. And just also to see where both of them have gone since the show, like that Jordan Peele has like went from being Wendell to like like this auteur. Like he's a legit auteur.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just amazing. It's just like body 10, face 10. Like, get it, Jordan Peele.
And then Keegan-Michael Key has become just like an absolute can't miss actor, comedian. Like, put him in any role, he's going to elevate that show, that movie. Can't miss.
He's good.
You can't miss. If I see him in a billing, if I see him in Deadline or in Synopsis, I'm like, oh, I'm going to keep an eye out for that thing because that's probably going to be really good. He chooses his projects very, very well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was so great on SNL.
Yeah. Oh my God, he was.
But yeah, no. But Key and Peele, the sketch comedy is just so smart and so funny and so wacky, but it's still very like, I mean, it's super male.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, so like one of my, should we get into some favorite sketches?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I only bring it up because you're like, it's super male. One of my favorites, and I think it's the earliest one that I remember watching and being like, oh, this is different. Because I think just there's like a level of just kind of like execution where like, you know, normally jokes will kind of, you kind of set like what is to talk in like UCB improv terms, because that's what I'm knowledgeable in. Kind of like you find what the game is, like what's weird about this situation or this character, and then you amplify and you amplify that thing over and over again. And Key and Peele amplified more than any other sketch I've ever seen. So the one I'm thinking of is I said bitch.
My husband and I still do that to each other. It's like, I'm sorry, bitch.
And then they're like in a tree, like 2 miles down the road or whatever it is. Like just the amplification of that sketch was so, I remember that as sticking out, be like, oh, okay. Then they're gonna go the literal extra mile in that sketch, but like, they're going to go the extra mile with these sketches and really just push things until sometimes sketches are like, oh, it's one beat too many. And then two more beats. It's like, oh, they're still going. And now it's funny again. Yeah. Like that to me is the Key and Peele experience, you know?
No, that's totally, totally it. One of my favorites is the Continental Breakfast.
Right.
Jordan Peele is having a Continental Breakfast as if he's on the continent. Because it's like, what the fuck is a Continental Breakfast? Why do you call it that? obviously love all of the Wendells. And I mean, my favorite is the NFL draft with all the crazy names.
I was going to talk about this one as well. So it's like, I think it's the East West kind of all-star game.
Yeah.
Yeah. The East West game. And this too is that sort of like that heightening, right? I think I said amplify earlier, but heighten is the correct word. But anyway, that heightening of here's the thing. And then we're going to keep pushing it. Right. So like,
let's meet the players from the East.
Tavarius Smith King, Merrimack College.
Ty Royal Smoochie Wallace, University of Miami.
Desquarius Green Jr., University of Notre Dame.
Ibrahim Moizus, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
Jack Marius Tack Theratrix, Michigan State University.
The Isaiah T. Billings Clyde, Coastal Carolina University.
Hingle McKringleberry, Penn State University.
Le Carpetron Duke Marriott, Florida Atlantic University.
That became a series of sketches, but then it heightened to one of the characters that was one of the names in the sketch, Hingle McKringleberry, they then followed him, and he had the touchdown celebration sketch where also brilliant, the three pumps, two pumps is not a flag, but three pumps is a flag. Like, just so, so good.
And but also what's so hilarious about that sketch is that like they really weren't that far off with the names. Like, these names are insane. And it was just, I love that they saw the comedy in that and were like, this is a sketch. Do you hear this? Because it's like, you can totally tell, like, they probably are watching, they watch this kind of stuff like every week, like watching sports and stuff. And they're probably always like,
yeah,
what the fuck? That's too many apostrophes. Yeah. You can't have two apostrophes in your name. The love that I feel for Key and Peele, it just feels so personal. And I feel like it really, it's really the definition of what a favorite show is. It's kind of like, like, I think someone had said on a previous episode, like a show was kind of like a binky. It was like very soothing.
Yeah.
Like, Key and Peele is that for me. So, like, I mean, it probably could have been forever, but like, it's just, it's my favorite. And it's just, I know any episode that I put on, I'm going to like it. I think that they went out at a great time, even though obviously I'd want them to never go out. I understand why they did. And I understand why with comedies like that, like, you kind of, you got to set an end date for that.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, it just, like, it's one of those things that I can't wait until my kids are old enough to appreciate shows like that so that we can watch that and laugh together.
Oh, that'll be really cool. That'll be really, really cool. Before I move on, I do want to bring up one more time. Again, if we hadn't already talked about it in our Criteria episode, if it weren't already on Brandy's Criteria, Chappelle's Show might maybe be in a slot instead of Key and Peele, because without Chappelle's Show, there is no Key and Peele, right? I mean, even the structure and the setup was the two of them on a stage talking to an audience, setting up sketches. Very Chappelle Show in format, and then the later seasons,
For them in the car,
for them on a, like a road trip talking about stuff and just kind of, which I liked though.
Because yeah, it was fine.
Was that True Detective inspired? Was that around the same time as True Detective? And maybe I'm making this up, but like for some reason that's correlated in my head is like they were on around the same time.
Like when did it end?
It ended, so I just looked it up. So Key and Peele was on from January 2012 to September 2015.
Okay.
And True Detective, that finale was in March 2014. So maybe those latter couple seasons, maybe you were a little True Detective inspired of the, you know, two guys in a car talking about shooting the shit.
Okay.
Time is a flat circle. But again, enough about these white shows.
Yeah.
I got to stop doing this. This is ridiculous.
Well, Dan, it's hard because there's just so many of them.
Fucking so many of them. But I didn't want to talk about Key and Peele without mentioning Chappelle's Show. I feel like, again, one doesn't happen without the other. A lot of influence there. But I think Key and Peele, you know, hit my generation or where I was in my life just a little bit more. And also there's more episodes now, which is why it's in my forever category. But I'll leave it at that because I will come back to it briefly when we get to our forever shows, just to justify why it's in my forever and not another category.
To wrap up, Key and Peele is my favorite show. Body 10, Face 10 is what I give it.
Body 10, Face 10. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Dan, what's your first favorite show?
My first favorite show, we'll stay with comedy here. We'll stay in this lane. It's a more recent show. I've mentioned it on the podcast before and more of a recent what am I watching sort of deal. But my favorite late night show on TV right now is The Amber Ruffin Show.
Oh, she's so great.
I am such a student of late night. It holds such a huge spot in my heart, right? It's in college, I produced and worked on a late night sketch comedy show. I worked for SNL. I worked for Jimmy Fallon. I worked for The Daily Show. Like late night is in my blood. And Amber Ruffin has the best late night show on TV right now. And like the way you were talking about Key and Peele, the show you look forward to every week, I look forward to Amber Ruffin every week.
So what's the kind of the format of the show? Because I know it's on Peacock. I haven't seen the episodes. I have seen her when she was on Fallon.
She was on Seth Meyers. So she is
Seth Meyers.
So she's still a writer performer on Seth Meyers. So if you don't know Amber Ruffin, quick backstory, you may have seen her on Seth Meyers. She does the brilliant Amber Says What segments when there's too much news for the monologue, whatever. She comes on and does like, here's what happened in this past week. But she frames it as like, this happened and I was like, what? And this happened and I was like, what? Like, it's just, it's really, really, really well done. And then she also does jokes Seth can't tell, right? So there's this whole thing where Seth is like, as a straight white guy, there's just jokes that I can and shouldn't tell. So here's Amber Ruffin, a black woman, and another writer, Jenny, who is a gay woman, then they're going to do the punchlines of these jokes instead. And it always kind of turns on him at the end, and it's great. So that's where I was introduced to her. And I think a lot of other people. And then when Peacock came out, they're doing, this was kind of a bid to do their own late night show. It's once a week. It's on Friday nights. And it's the structure is pretty late night, right? But the balance of silliness to seriousness, I think, is really well done, kind of in that Seth Meyers vein. I think it has a similar sort of balance to it, but way more singing, way more goofy, spoofy songs, way more absurdist desk bits where it's like, oh, here's a random audience member who is our only audience member, because this show has totally been produced in a pandemic, so has never had an audience. I can't wait until it finally has an audience. I think it's also my favorite because because it's done in an empty studio, it reminds me of the show that I produced in college. It was called Syracuse After Hours. And if any of After Hours alumni are listening, shout out. But, you know, we were inspired by like Conan and SNL at the time, but we didn't have an audience. So all of our studio bits kind of played to an empty studio. We had to kind of incorporate that. And the way Amber does that with her show, I really, really love. She has a great sidekick named Tarek Davis, who's wonderful. But, you know, similar to like kind of what all the late night shows need to do now as well and should do. She has a recurring segment called How Did We Get Here? Mm-hmm. That is some of the most hard hitting, like, hey, this is a thing that's happening. And I'm not just going to tell you that it's happening. I'm going to tell you kind of why and how we got here. So if you're not aware of the kind of inner workings of this societal issue, it's like way more fun. John Oliver in that way. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm gonna learn something, but like she just makes it like John Oliver can be a drag sometimes and be like, oh yeah, we're gonna slog through this really, really depressing 20 minutes. Whereas Amber's like, it's still me. We're still gonna be fun, but like you're gonna know when she's affected by it, when she is taking something seriously, when she's hurt or traumatized by something. She doesn't hide that. She lets it show, mm-hmm. which I also think is important. For all those reasons, I just fucking love it. It's a really, really fun show.
Oh, I love that. I haven't watched it. And now, I mean, like I said, like Dan, like you're just selling them like bang, bang, bang. I'm buying.
Sesame Street introduced two new Black Muppets this week to help facilitate discussions of racism and Black identity, which must have been a bummer for the new Black Muppets. Can we just do counting?
relive the trauma? All right, S is for systemic racism.
Authorities in Kansas arrested a man after he allegedly attacked a grocery store worker during an argument about Chick-fil-A sauce. And it's a good thing they caught him because he was about to dip.
Oh, man, when you're Black and you get your own little show and you get to do Black puns, it's gonna fill up your heart.
You must watch an Amber Ruffin. I'll tell you what, before our season finale, you know, and it's a very topical thing. So you don't need to watch, you know, to like catch up, but like, you know, catch a week here and there and tell me what you think.
No, I definitely will. Also, and I don't know where we want to put this at, but I just thought of like two Almost shows that we definitely should have talked about, which are Z-Way and Desus and Miro.
What?
What are we doing?
Fuck. I'm instantly rethinking. Oh, Desus and Miro. Fuck. That would be an incredible forever show.
Yeah.
Z-Way. Love you, Z-Way. Love that show to death. It's only six episodes.
Yeah. No, it's like that's a perfect Almost show.
Yeah. Two late night Almost shows that shame on us for not mentioning sooner, but I'm glad we did.
They're both amazing. Showtime's killing it.
They really are. All right, Brandy, what is your second favorite show?
My second favorite show, finally, I can get a Real Housewives in here.
Ooh, which one? So
my second favorite show is The Real Housewives of Potomac.
Okay.
So this is a newer entry into the Housewives extended universe and has been on, I want to say we're going into season 6, which premieres in a couple of weeks. And I cannot wait because Potomac just brings it. It's so good. It's been good from the jump. And I will fight anyone who says otherwise. I thought season 1 was great. Okay. And that's why I came back for season 2. And like they did a little like cast rejigger, like whatever. Like it's such a good show. Potomac is like this super rich area outside of DC in Maryland. And do all of the women live there? No. is only one of them like really actually super rich? Yes. Do the other ones rent? Mm-hmm. Nothing bad about renters. I love renting. We're new for life.
Right. We are all renters here in New York.
Yeah, we're all renters here. But Potomac's just great. And I love that, like, I feel like the best housewives are stem from organic friendships.
Yes.
And it starts to fall off and you can feel the wheels kind of fall off when they're just kind of putting women together.
Right. And this is like, Brandy, in our day job, this is kind of casting 101. It's always better to find a cast that has authentic connections that you can kind of literally put up the flow chart and see all the connecting lines. These are friends. These are frenemies. These are rivals. These are Sharon X, whatever. It's always better when there's true connections there.
Yeah. And it's like, and on Potomac, I want to say that like at least 4 of the women, like Giselle and Robin are actually friends. They all knew Karen. I think that they brought Ashley in And then now they have this new housewife, Wendy, who like was tangentially related to somebody. They just got rid of Monique, which like we can discuss because I'm not down with that. And like kind of how that went down. But, you know, the drama is dumb, but it's real. And I just love them, you know, and they actually, so this past season of Potomac, they really brought up something that I think is really important, in that, the big drama last season was that, so there's this one housewife, her name's Candace, and she's the fucking worst. Okay. Even though she did a great cameo for my friend Karen, it was amazing. She did a great job, like props to that cameo, but like on the show, she gets the villain edit and like after every single episode, I'm like, I fucking hate her. And she's just like, she was, I think like a Miss USA or something. Okay. She just thinks she's great. She thinks she can sing. Like it's anyway.
Pageant girl vibes.
Anyway, she and one of the housewives, Monique, who is married to Chris Samuel, who is a former NFL player. So like they're they're actually really, really rich, right? Which was a point of contention with some of the other cast members because they were 100% super jealous of how actual rich she is. But Monique and Candace were friends. They had a falling out, and this culminated in a fight at a winery where they laid hands on each other. First, Monique laid hands on Candace, but like also Candace has like she runs her mouth, and it's like this was my whole thing with the fight. If you're gonna run your mouth, you're gonna get hit in it. In a story, like, no, you should never, I have children. I would never tell them to lay their hands on anybody unless somebody is talking shit. And
sometimes
folks don't understand.
And especially like
hit them in the mouth.
Excessive shit, right? Like, it's like, it's not just like a remark here or there, but like the continued excessive, like it, this is now, you know, like, you know, harassment, assaultive behavior, you know?
Yeah. So Monique, like, you know, pull her hair, and also like after they got her off of her, like she was like, I'm fine, and then started running towards the door like to try to get her again, and it was like, oh my god, it was something. Anyway, they both filed charges against each other. Both charges are dropped because it was bullshit. But what it brought up is that a lot of the other women on the show were like, I can't believe you did that. You're making Black women look so bad and like this and this, like so angry. As if we're just forgetting about the fact that in season one of Housewives of New Jersey, Teresa Giudice fucking flipped a table over in the middle of a restaurant and also pushed Andy Cohen at the reunion. Like, okay, but like, but the Black women in Potomac, they have to be worried about being the angry Black women. Right. Like that was, but I was really glad that that discussion got started.
And that's, you hate to see that like, because these cast members happen to be Black, these women happen to be Black, they get that, it's almost like they get that societal edit in a way, right? Like, it's like, oh yeah, society automatically kind of like post-produces them, story produces them into angry Black women territory, where it's just like, no, I'm just a person who was in this heated scenario.
A person who this bitch keeps talking shit.
Who resorted to violence like so many people in this country, white, Black, like this is one of the most violent fucking countries in the world. So, like so many people here resort to violence. It doesn't need to be because they're an angry Black person. They're an angry person. You know? Like,
guess what? Somebody puts your finger in their face. Maybe you're going to react.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if you're Black or white. It just matters that you're a person. Somebody just put their fucking finger in your face.
Right. You're someone who's been disrespected. And, you know, for a lot of people, that's not going to abide. And whatever happens, happens, you know, not endorsing violence. Anyway, again, we're not endorsing the violence.
No, not endorsing.
What we're saying is the double standard is bullshit.
Yeah. Like Monique, yes, she should have held it together. But also like Candace, shut the fuck up. Right. But yeah, and then at the reunion, Monique bought like a literal binder of receipts. And it was just like, she's not being invited back next season.
Now, question on this Potomac of it all. How many seasons so far? Do you think it has a longevity? And what put it in your favorite instead of a best or forever?
So 100% has longevity. It's going into season six.
Okay.
They have not really changed up the core cast too much.
That's a good sign, I feel. That's always a good
sign.
Yeah,
like the main, like Karen Huger, who is just the best. Like she's the grand dame of Potomac, but like literally like broke bitch. Renting this huge ass house, married to who she calls the Black Bill Gates. No, he's not. He's nowhere. No. Okay. Like, Bill, no, he's not. But my husband and I often reference him.
Sure.
We're like, I don't know. It sounds like, you know, BBG to me. but yeah. So, and the reason I would say that it's in my favorite is because this is the first Housewives that my husband will like watch with me. Because Aww. He started watching it from the beginning with me.
Okay. That's really sweet.
And so he usually hates when I put on Housewives and like he'll tolerate it because like he like usually when I have a Housewives on, he's just like, get this shit out of my face. But with Potomac, he's like, yeah. And like his good friend also watches it.
Okay.
Loyal listener, Karen. Hi. And so we can all text about it and it's really fun.
That's
like,
nice.
Yeah, like me and Moses and Kieran and his wife, Brandy.
Nice.
And we got Kieran for his birthday, a cameo from Candace where she did indeed sing.
Here's where the cameo came in. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So it was a great $50 that we spent.
I love it. I love this pick because it, you know, you haven't been able to talk about a Housewives outside of your almost category. That was episode one. So this is a long awaited deep dive into the Housewives for Brandy, which I love. Oh, yes. This is great.
Yeah. So we've done our faves. So our faves are,
I have one more fave.
Oh, you have one more fave. Oh, sorry.
I have one more fave.
Key and Peele wasn't both our fave.
That's right. Right. Okay. That's right. That's my forever.
Okay. Yeah. What's your second fave?
My second favorite show is Rami.
Oh, tell me about it, because I haven't seen it.
I would love nothing more. So Rami on Hulu is created by a comedian named Rami Youssef, and it's one of those sort of like late 20s, early 30s coming of age stories that a guy of my age is really responding to right now, right? So it kind of has a little bit of Insecure, Atlanta, you know, finding yourself in this transitional period vibes to it. And it also has this thing of like, you know, it just feels like a show about people who most of whom happen to be Muslim, right? Mm. And it's just like, you know, Rami is dealing with, you know, growing up in that culture where you're not supposed to have sex, even though he does fuck around and feels bad about it. And, you know, he's masturbating too much and is addicted to sugar and, you know, doesn't want to get fucked up and has friends that do, but like, it's just, I really, really love it. It's one of those ones also that kind of veers on the edge of, is it comedy, is it drama? Mm-hmm. I'm putting it in as a drama. I'm going to get ahead of this because Amber Ruffin show is clearly a comedy.
Mm-hmm, clearly.
But Rami, I'm going to put it in as a drama because there are some episodes that kind of like Atlanta, like really kind of bring it. Like there's a whole storyline with his mom that's not particularly funny, but really eye-opening where she's an Uber driver, but can't, like has no filter and really, really botches an interaction with a trans person who is non-binary and she can't understand or like just kind of like figure out like how to talk to or about this person and then gets a really bad rating on Uber and like tracks this person down. And it's like this really kind of like interesting, really moving story. And then she eventually becomes a U.S. citizen in a really, really fun, a really interesting storyline. There's a flashback episode to Rami as like a young kid in the aftermath of 9/11. This like flashes back to like his, you know, elementary, middle school years. That is really, really well done. It's a show that will make you laugh, but it feels a bit more dramatic when I think about it and the things that resonate with me. It's more of those dramatic scenes. I don't remember laughing out loud. But again, that's no slight against the show because I think it's incredibly well done. It does a really good job of, and again, like the sort of thing that you want to see in diverse programming. It doesn't wave a flag and say, hey, everybody, look at Rami's disabled friend, this disabled actor who's in the show. It's just like, he's just there and he's just a person with wants and needs and experiences and feelings and is part of this dynamic. And it's just, it's a really, and again, I hate to say it's a refreshing show because it shouldn't be, but it feels like it is for me. Like, it's like, hey, here's an experience that I can learn from and learn about, but also relate to deeply. And I love that about it.
Hey, chick, do you want some of my mom's kushiri? I know we haven't really eaten all day, and it's still kind of warm.
Best to move on a light stomach. We eat after we find the card, Sharma. Please pray, Rami. Make a dua for this dog.
Are we supposed to pray for dogs? I thought dogs were haram.
Who told you that?
My parents. But they also told me that Pokemon cards are haram, and I'm pretty sure Pokemon aren't in the Quran.
It's really, really good. And it's awesome. One of my favorite shows. And I look forward to it coming back.
Well, I want to check it out. This is like, I feel like I've got my work cut out for me in terms of shows that I got to watch.
No, right.
But it's a good problem to have.
Such is the thing whenever we talk about our shows. I know.
Yeah.
But with that is, so yeah. Now we are through our favorite category. So your favorite shows were Key and Peele and Real Housewives of Potomac. Mm-hmm. My favorite shows were The Amber Ruffin Show and Rami. So now we're on our forever category. I've revealed one of mine already. So Key and Peele is on my list. What is one of your forever shows?
One of my forever shows is Another Housewives.
All right, let's keep it going. Let's keep it rolling.
And it is The Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Okay.
So Real Housewives of Atlanta, I think, was the third iteration of Housewives, because it started with OC, and then it was New York, and then Atlanta. And when it first started, it was an all-Black cast plus one white woman, one Kim Zolciak.
One Kim.
Yeah. And I feel like they really got the casting right when Candy Burris came on the scene. So Candy is like a legit like mogul. She was in the girl group Escape in the 90s. Okay. She wrote several hit songs for Destiny's Child.
Which ones? Do you know a couple by name?
She wrote several songs, including Bills, Bills, Bills by Destiny's Child.
Wait, get out. No way.
Yeah. Bugaboo by Destiny's Child. A little tune called No Scrubs. Get by TLC.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. This is kind of blowing my mind. I had no idea about this.
Yeah.
Candy Burris, Bills and No Scrubs.
Yeah. No Scrubs is like I buried the lead there. Yeah. But yeah.
A little bit.
No Scrubs. Because I was like, wait a second, she wrote like a really, really famous song. and you know, like every cast member I have love for. Even Kim, who like I kind of can't stand, but like I love the old seasons with like Nene and Sheree, and like Who Gonna Check Me Boo, and Sheree with Kim's wig being like, I didn't pull your wig, I just shifted it. I love Portia, even though I used to hate Portia, but now I love Portia. Portia, who at one point thought that the Underground Railroad was an actual railroad.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But now she's like a huge civil rights like activist. Like she got put in jail like several times at Breonna Taylor protests in Kentucky. Like she like talk about character growth, you guys.
Growth, learning, doing the work, people.
Yes, like she's doing the work. It's like I feel like Kenya, who is the fucking worst, like had a fucking baby at 47. Like,
whoa.
Yes, with a terrible, terrible man, and it's not going well, but like, she got that baby, you know what I mean? And like, Cynthia, my dear, dear Cynthia, who we saw get married to Peter, who was the fucking worst, and she got smart and like divorced him, and now she's married to Mike Hill, and they're known as Chill. She loves that. She That's loves great. Referring to them as Chill. And it's like, Cynthia, let's relax. Let's relax with that. Okay. Oh, I love, love, love the show. And I put it in my forever category because I think we're on season, is it 13 or 14 when it comes back again? This past season, like, left a little to be desired. But like, I'm giving all the Housewives a pass this year because of COVID. Like, the fact that they were able to film a season at all, like, thank you. Like, that's all. Like, I can just thank them for being able to do the work. But like, it's really hard to have like a really successful housewife season when you can't have over the top stupid parties. And like, they can't be like going out and like making fools of themselves.
Right.
I think like the highlight seasons would have been like when Phaedra was on, because Phaedra's hilarious. Like, so she's like a lawyer. She was Bobby Brown's lawyer, actually.
Oh, wow.
Call back to Tracy.
Call back to the Tracy episode.
So, yeah, Tracy probably, like, definitely knows her. I should have asked her.
If you haven't listened to the Tracy Baker Simmons episode of this podcast, please, please do.
Yes.
Great episode if you haven't checked it out.
Yes. But the Phaedra episodes were amazing. Like, so her husband, Apollo, you could obviously tell, like, was there's something super sketchy about him. And there was. He's the white-collar criminal, and he is currently in prison. and he went to prison on the show. She had like a Lion King themed party for her son, who she refers to as a prince. She also is where I first heard about the term sippancy, which is, I feel like she made it up. They try to make it seem like she did. And like people will say it now. They're like, oh no, you know, a sippancy. It's like, that's not a real thing. And like Phaedra made that up for Housewives of Atlanta. But it's like when you have a new baby and you invite people over to sip cocktails and see the baby.
Oh, that's a thing, huh?
No. No. It is. I mean, it is now. It is now because she made it a thing. So like, yes, for like in Housewives, Atlanta Housewives, like making it into the pop culture lexicon. But yeah, Housewives of Atlanta is my jam. I love it. It's the best franchise.
It's the best of the franchise.
It's the best of the franchises. And like yeah. That's, and I love New York and I love Potomac, but like.
But it just sounds like Atlanta has a depth of story and just character change and development that's mm-hmm. I haven't heard at least you talk about in other franchises, right? This feels like the one that's,
yeah,
if you had to pick one to watch forever, this mm-hmm. has the most going on. It has the most going for it.
It really, really does. I mean, even if like the stuff going on is, you know, Candy or not Candy, but Kenya showing up at Marlo's hair care party with her own hair care line and a marching band to promote it. they're all just like so extra, and they're just so extra in like the best way, because they're so extra in a way that's like that doesn't feel fake. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like if other women in the other cities like were as extra as the Atlanta women, you'd be like, what are they trying to do? But the Atlanta women, you're just like, yes girl, yes. Yes. So yes, my first forever show is the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh wow. Okay. So that is
an
iconic show.
Mm-hmm.
Deserved of a forever slot.
Mm-hmm.
My second forever pick is also an iconic show.
Okay.
And when I say it, you might be like, well, wait a second. There's a lot of white folks on that show. And there are, but the creator of this show, I would wager maybe, and I don't have the receipts to back this up, but Shonda Rhimes.
Yes.
Has there been a more successful creator of color in the TV space? I'm not sure that there has been, because
mm-mm.
that woman has built an empire,
mm-hmm.
and the bedrock of that empire is a little show called Grey's Anatomy.
Amazing forever pick, Dan. Amazing forever pick. Yeah.
Grey's Anatomy, I mean.
Still on.
Still on. Still on. And even if I went with just the Shonda Rhimes seasons, mm-hmm. I believe that's still 17 seasons of shows. Like,
mm-hmm.
I could cut it off after she left and would still have plenty. And I have a deep history with Grey's Anatomy. I watched it from the beginning. My mom loved it. My brother loved it as well. He might still actually watch. And if you're listening, we need to talk about this if you're still watching. But, you know, I grew up in a house that idolized ER.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't quite old enough to really get mm-hmm. into ER. So Grey's Anatomy was like the medical drama that really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's Grey's fucking Anatomy. If you don't know it, if you haven't seen it.
It was an almost show for me.
Okay. All right. Very mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah.
It's on my forever list because it's been so long since I've been in on it that I don't remember a ton of it, but I know that it's that sort of show that can absolutely be comfort food. There's mm-hmm. a lot of familiarity with those characters. I mean, Meredith Grey has been there since day one. So yeah. Like you always have Meredith Grey there. This show also has just some like iconic TV memory moments for me,
mm-hmm.
specifically season two. So like it was late in the game in season two. So like it had already established itself like, oh, this is a thing. This is huge. And it got a post Super Bowl episode in season two. And it was a two-parter. The first part was called It's the End of the World. And the second part was called As We Know It. And this is the bomb in the chest cavity episode.
Oh my God, in her hand.
Absolutely just rocked me, wrecked me, blew me to pieces, if you will. But featuring, by the way, and has to be mentioned, one Kyle Chandler.
I was like, and I know how come it must have really affected you so hardly.
But here's the thing. This was pre-Friday Night Lights.
Oh, so you didn't know him.
I did not know him as Coach T at this time. This was February 06. It might have been, shit, it was probably right around when Friday Night Lights came out. But I'm not sure. I definitely didn't know him as Coach T. He was the bomb tech. He was the bomb technician. So the story is someone comes in. There's a bomb in their chest cavity. I forget how it got there or why it's in there.
They had been messing with like a weird like war gun thing in the garage, and he got shot with it.
That's right. Yeah, but it hadn't exploded or it hadn't detonated. Mm-hmm. And but it's about to, and at a certain point, Meredith just like on instinct sticks her hand in there to stop it from exploding. So now Meredith is stuck with her hand in this guy's chest cavity, talking to Kyle Chandler, trying to stop this bomb from going off.
I feel like crying just like thinking about it.
I know. And the music cues, it was just like, it was Grey's Anatomy at its absolute peak, at its absolute pinnacle.
The Grey's Anatomy music cues. First of all, shout out to the music supervisor on that show.
Absolutely.
Talk about memories. Like, you created my walking soundtrack on my iPod mini from 2005 to 2009 specifically.
Yeah. Like, this was just peak Grey's Anatomy. It was the first part of this two-part episode premiered on my birthday, February 5th, 2006, which means I was in college, like, second semester, freshman year, I think, like, pledging a fraternity at that point, and was still, like... Like, still made it a point to, like, watch and be engrossed by this episode of TV. I remember it so clearly. Like, that's just one episode of hundreds. So,
oh my God, the whole Denny and Izzy arc.
The Denny and Izzy arc, the George, you know, I think around there is actually when I stopped watching. And I didn't, it's been on for, you know, going on 20 seasons now. Mm-hmm. I probably watched the first six or seven.
I watched up until Meredith and Derek didn't end up together like the second time. Then I was like, fuck you guys.
Right.
Like, obviously you're meant to be together. Why are you being so weird? Like, oh my God, do you remember like the reveal of Addison?
Yeah.
And then the reveal of McSteamy. Like, it just, it's such a great soap. Like, she just know how to do soap.
And that's the thing. Like, in the afterlife, a good soap is, I mean, that's on par with your Real Housewives. That at its heart is a soap, right? So like having a really, really strong soap with a seemingly never ending episodes, it's never going to end, you know, until literally Ellen Pompeo decides, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Right. But just so many great characters. I'm forgetting her name. Who was like the attending who, cause they all started as interns. It was,
Miranda, I keep wanting to call her Chief. Her first name was Miranda.
Bailey.
Like she had a Bailey. Yeah.
Bailey.
Miranda Bailey.
Yeah. Just Miranda Bailey. Incredible character. Mm-hmm. Is she still on the show? She might actually still be on it.
I think she's still on. Chief is not still on, right?
I don't know. And this is the thing though, like, and this is a bit of a risk. I'm picking a show in my forever category, which I haven't seen every episode, but I'm okay with that because I feel like as a forever show, like it can be that sort of, even though it's a medical drama and there's serious things, but it can be that sort of comfort food. It can turn into that thing where like, even if I watch it a dozen times over, there's so many, there's such character journey that by the time you get to the end, you're looking at Meredith as a full grown adult who has lived a life and had these relationships and all of these things and family and all this stuff. And then you go back and it's like, oh wow, little baby interns and Christina and Karev and George
and Izzy, they all live together.
And, you know, and just like you get to see the origins of these great actors that have now gone on to do great things like Sandra Oh, who is just like, this is the role that kind of defined her and like all these incredible things. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's Grey's Anatomy and, you know, there's been plenty said and it's been on forever, but it's got to be a forever show for me. It just has to be.
I love it. Like I said, it was in my, I had it on my almost list till I saw that it was going to be in your criteria. So I was like, we're going to talk about it. But Shonda Rhimes is amazing. She, you know, I started Bridgerton. I will finish it. But I think that Shonda Rhimes is awesome. I feel like I would watch, like, I feel like if she's a part of it, like, I would give it a go. It's like, I didn't watch How to Get Away with Murder, but really only because I feel like a lot of other stuff was out.
You just hate Viola Davis? Is that what it is?
I just think Viola Davis is like the worst. No, I'm just kidding. I actually love her. I follow her on Instagram and Facebook. Okay. Yeah, so like, you know, that like the love is real. She's amazing. But yeah, no, I think it's a great forever pick. There's so many episodes. I think it's probably still got another 5 to 6 seasons in it, if I'm being honest.
It might just. But I want to go back to the creator of it all, right? You know, the reason that it's on my list, the Shonda Rhimes of it all. I think you're right. Like,
She's
missed a couple times. I remember there was a show, I don't remember the name of it, but it actually starred Zach Guilford, I think, who played Matt Saracen. It was kind of like a Doctors Without Borders show that like only went maybe a season. So like, she's had some misses.
I don't even remember it.
But you don't remember them because the hits are so huge. The Grey's Anatomy, the spinoff into Private Practice.
The Scandals.
Fuck, how is Scandal not on either of our almost list?
I never watched Scandal.
I love those first couple seasons. I really, really love Kerry Washington in that show. Mm. But yeah, like Shonda Rhimes, I know you mentioned Bridgerton. Like, I kind of believe Netflix when they're like, yeah, it's the biggest show we've ever had. It has the most views of everything, anything we've ever had. It's like, well, yeah, that makes fucking sense. You're gonna pair Shonda Rhimes with period fucking British shit, like you cannot miss.
Yeah, you really can't.
Can't miss. I haven't seen it yet. Well, that's not true. I've kind of seen it. Here's my Bridgerton story. I was home for a break. My mom was watching it and I was kind of in the dining room, which is right off the living room, so I could hear what's going on. And I endured experiencing my mom experience some of the hotter and heavier sex scenes of Bridgerton in a way that like, I just feel like I can't watch it. I'm not going to watch it. But I understand its significance. I will say that. But Shonda Rhimes, like, I think that she set up such a just an ironclad show from the jump that it's able to have gone for as long as it has and still go on for another 5 years. And it's going to crack the 20 season mark and be one of the longest running, you know, network dramas that's ever been on. And, you know, I'm never going to run out of episodes. So forever show.
Yeah.
We got one more pick, Brandy, to round out the criteria. What do you got?
Yeah, one more pick. This is going to be a little controversial.
Okay.
But I had to put it down. I thought about not putting it down, but then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be true to myself if I don't put this down, because like, I would watch this show every day forever.
Okay.
Because I loved it that much.
Okay.
The Cosby Show, everyone. The Cosby Show.
Here we are. Okay.
Yes. All right.
Let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Hey, friends. Real quick, before we get into it, we just wanted to let you know that we recorded this episode before Bill Cosby's sentence was egregiously overturned. So when you hear us talking about him being in jail, that's why. But just to be clear, we are not cool with him. Okay? Back to the show. It's very controversial, but like, just know that I love this show so much. Like, this was for a little Black girl growing up south of Atlanta. Like, this was the life that I wanted. I was like, oh my God, like, I want to be a Cosby kid. And like, Bill Cosby is very problematic. And I am not by any means glossing over how problematic he is. And no, like, he's getting what he deserves right now.
He's a dirty, fucking gross.
Yeah. Dirty, dirty old man. And he did terrible, terrible things. But it's one of those things that's like, how do you separate the art from the artist? And I think that if it's art that you consumed when you were young and like it gives you like that feeling of nostalgia because you remember how it made you feel like when you were watching this in the late 80s, early 90s, that's a little bit different. And I feel like not different in terms of like, obviously, like what Bill Cosby did is fucking wrong and he deservedly is being punished for that. Mm-hmm. But like, what he did with the Cosby Show by showing this black family, like this black upper middle class family, like just being a family, and it wasn't about them being a black family, was really revolutionary, especially to a kid growing up. Because it's like, as a black kid, you know, if I saw black stories on TV, it was always like, well, they're on crack. Or, you know, it's like there's like the one token black friend. It's like, no, this is like a black family. Like, this is like my family. Like, this is a mom and it, like I had a mom and a dad and a brother. Like, there was no like, you know, my mom wasn't on drugs. My dad didn't steal things and wasn't in jail. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't. There were just so many, I feel like there were so many stereotypes of things.
Right. And cut through that in a lot of ways.
And it really cut through that and was just like, no, this is like an awesome family. Guess what? Black people can be lawyers. Black people can be doctors. And they are. And they have like really great marriages. And like in that kind of sitcom life from the late 80s, early 90s, with black families, when you had like Family Matters and Cosby Show and like these shows where, you know, mom and dad are happy and dealing with kids who are doing kid shit. So like, I know it's a controversial pick because like Bill Cosby is rightly canceled, but like, I can't cancel the Cosby Show.
And you can't cancel the impact too. And this goes back to kind of how we started this conversation with, the way you describe it, it feels like this is a very early example of a show that kind of was diverse in the way that we want our shows to be diverse in that it was just a family that happened to be black. It was a family that just lived this life and had these relationships and these dynamics, and they just happened to be black, right? And that's important, and that's crucial, and that's formative.
Because you think back to like to shows like What's Happening and The Jeffersons, and those were definitely like black shows, black cast, but like the whole thing and like What's Happening is that like they live in the projects, and like this is, you know, like and this is what's going on in their life. And with The Jeffersons, it was like it was a thing that these black people were living in, the like, I mean, the fucking theme song. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this doesn't happen all the time. Black folks moving up to the East Side. What?
Right.
But with the Cosby Show, like, it was never, I mean, I'm sure they had their very special episodes, you know,
right,
where, you know, you talk about like racism and whatever. But for the most part, it's like the Cosby Show almost existed in this world where it was like, don't want to say that racism didn't exist, but that like they literally never had to acknowledge it. And that's like kind of refreshing, because like as a black viewer of content, like I don't just always want to see how bad things are fucked up because of racism. Because guess what? I have to live that shit every day. Like, can I just like watch? Like, that's why it's so, I love watching Insecure. You know, because it's like, I don't have to deal. It's like, yeah, like we all, like I deal with weird microaggressions every day of my life. But like, sometimes it's nice to just be like, this is a nice thing to watch. I like watching this, you know, and that's kind of how, that's where the Cosby Show falls into me. And it's like, it's very unfortunate that Bill Cosby has to be attached to it.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that there could be the Cosby Show without Bill Cosby.
And that is the tricky thing. And that's a conversation that's not going to stop anytime soon, especially as, you know, more people are getting quote unquote canceled, which, by the way, it is an interesting thing to look back at works that were made before things came to light. Right. And I think it is okay and appropriate and can also be helpful to be like, you know, as humans, we can weigh two conflicting ideas in our brains at the same time. And that's normal. It shouldn't be so cut and dry as, well, Cosby did these terrible fucking awful things, therefore everything he's ever touched is now shit. No, Cosby was a terrible person, is a terrible person that did terrible things, who was also a creative visionary who created this show that helped millions and millions of people. And that can't be discounted. And if you want to take that show as a capsule and separate it from what we now know of this guy, that is fine. And that is your right. And that is something that you should hold on to, especially if it has such meaning to you and was so formative. Like, fucking cherish that and love that. But also recognize, like, you can watch it and be like, ugh, Yeah, well, this scene was a little weird now knowing what I know, but that's not going to taint this whole experience, you know?
No, look, I get why I can't binge it on Netflix, okay? I get it.
Right.
Like, I feel like Cosby, for me, is kind of in the same bucket as Michael Jackson, where it's like, oh, God, I know he was sketch, but like, God damn, I love those songs.
Right.
You know? But I will also say that, like, but for, and that's because, like, I became acquainted with Michael Jackson as a kid. R. Kelly, for me, is in it, like, it was totally fine for me to never listen to an R. Kelly song again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's something that I'm like, that's fine. I don't ever need to listen to him again. Right. But it's also because all of his songs are, like, extremely sexual. And now that you know where he was coming from, it's, like, really hard. Whereas Michael Jackson's songs, like, I don't, like, Billie Jean is obviously not his lover. Like, you know?
Yeah. Like, although I have had to rethink, my favorite Michael Jackson wedding song was always PYT. And now that has a bit of a different, you know, connotation to it. So, you know, but that's the thing. Like, it's okay that it's complicated. It's okay that it's good that we can have conversations like this where we're dissecting, like, the complication of loving a thing made by a bad person. And what does that mean? And how does that work? You know,
and can you love a thing made by a bad person?
Right. And what are the different experiences or factors that go into, well, yes, this bad person, it's not that we're letting anything slide. Again, this is all with recognition of these things happened and, you know, they should be held accountable in the ways that are appropriate, but you should be able to separate the work itself, because there was also dozens and probably hundreds of people that outside of Bill Cosby made that show great.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
The actors, the writers, the crew people. There's a lot of people that are brilliant and wonderful and deserve to be celebrated. And watching that show and having it on your forever list does that for all those other people as well.
Okay, so Dan, so your other forever show is obviously...
It's Key and Peele, right. Key and Peele. So, which we talked about at length, but I will now talk about why it's in my forever category. It's something that we bring up with our guests that we haven't brought up with each other, which is the twist.
Mm-hmm. What's the twist?
The forever show twist. The twist is, what if you could watch one of your two forever shows every time, like it's the first time? So you get to the end of a watch. We always say it's the Men in Black memory eraser. Mm-hmm. It erases that specific memory of watching that show, and you get to go back and watch like it's the first time. Tell you what, Key and Peele is my first time show, because Grey's, there's episodes on episodes on episodes. There's so many. I can rewatch those, whatever. But Key and Peele, to watch and laugh at those sketches, like it's like I laughed the first time I saw them, it would be such a joy that I want to have in the afterlife. So Key and Peele, that's the reason why it's not a favorite and why it's not a best, although it could be in contention for both. I want to rewatch that like a brand new fucking viewer every time, because boy, would that be fun.
That makes perfect sense. I think that mine would probably be the Atlanta Housewives, for the reason that you just said about Key and Peele, that like, it's just like, I want to see all these things happen for the first time again. Like, I want to see the wig shift. I want to see Sheree and Marlo just start like literally speaking gibberish at each other, at their house in, South Africa.
Yes, but Marlo, listen, you need to come in. You are nice. Cynthia, what you don't want to shine?
And also because like Cosby Show is like a ton of episodes. I haven't watched it in forever. So like, I feel like, and also it's a very comfort foody kind of show.
Right. Certain shows you don't want to rewatch. We've had this before where people have rejected the twist because you like the comfort factor of it. You like the...
And it's, well, and it's also like, and we forget now because every show, especially with comedies, like they have to be like so different and like come at it in a different way. But like Cosby Show was like, here's our A story, here's our B story, and here's a couple of C jokes.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and it always wraps up.
Yeah.
And you know, it you know, it's not totally Simpsons where like the slate is clean every time, but you know, a little bit in like those classic sitcom vibes where it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I feel like Rudy was in fifth grade the whole time. Right? Like, when did Theo and Vanessa ever graduate? Like, obviously, Lisa Bonet, why did I just forget what her, Denise, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot. Denise graduated because she got her spinoff with A Different World. But like, did Theo and Vanessa ever graduate high school?
Right.
I don't know. I don't think so. Anyway, yeah. So Cosby Show, I am fine to just watch every episode because every episode is essentially the same. But Housewives, I would love to be on those highs and lows like anew every time.
Yeah. Ah, I love it. All right. So
yeah,
that completes our respective criteria of color. Do you want to do a quick recap?
Yeah.
All right. So Brandy, your best shows are Atlanta and Insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite shows are Key and Peele and The Real Housewives of Potomac. And you would watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta and The Cosby Show forever.
Yes.
Great list. I love it.
And Dan, your best shows are I May Destroy You and Atlanta, the one we share.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite shows are The Amber Ruffin Show and Rami. And your forever shows are Key and Peele and Grey's Anatomy. Also a really great criteria of great shows that I would definitely watch.
Yeah. I gotta say, I really loved this episode, Brandy. I'm so glad we did this. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. We had this idea a little while back. Mm-hmm. I loved putting together this list. I will be honest, there's a lot of recent shows on here. It makes me a little sad that there's not as many kind of old school or nostalgic shows, although those things were talked about. I think the Almost shows, we had some of those, but
mm-hmm.
I, at the same time, I'm also inspired and heartened by the amount of newness on these lists, because that means more voices are in the mix. Mm-hmm. There's more creators of color being allowed or getting these opportunities for themselves to make these great works and mm-hmm. to put these shows together. And I look forward to coming back to this and adjusting this and adding to it as more shows come out, as more shows are completed.
Like, I mean, honestly, just as we've been talking, I've started thinking about other shows. It's like Bernie Mac Show. Fucking love that show.
Fuck the Bernie Mac Show. Yeah.
You know, like it's
like Dear White People, I didn't mention, which was really good. Like,
really good.
Like a solid Almost show. We'll see how it mm-hmm. ends. Like that's yeah. a fun one.
No, there's just so many when you like what I hate is that you have to kind of put the filter on it to remember the shows when they should just come to you. Like,
right.
But, you know, we're living, we're learning, hopefully, you know, going forward. Like, I mean, I did know, like, for sure that, like, Dave Chappelle was, like, on my criteria list. So it's like, but that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, that's a great thing. And listen, like we talked about at the top, right? Like, we can always do better. We're going to try and do better. Mm-hmm. We, you know, we're going to promote, you know, more shows from creators of color every chance we get. We'll do more mm-hmm. things like this. We'll update this list. And you all should do the same, right? Like seek out mm-hmm. shows that you might not have thought about before, or might not be in the specific lane of what you watch. If you're I only watch this, or I love this sort of thing. Well, I guarantee you there's a version of that created by someone of color that you're probably going to like as well. And just mm-hmm. Take the extra step, mm-hmm. put in just a little bit of effort. Cause at the end of the day, like it's all in the effort to watch incredible shows that are mm-hmm. really, really good and really fulfilling and rewarding and entertaining.
We want you watching good content.
Yes, absolutely. And
there's so much of it out there. Don't limit yourself, guys. Don't limit yourself.
Don't, please don't. And until next time, I think that's a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs.
Yeah. Please send us your six. You can email us at tvbffpodcast@gmail.com. And also don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And also, guess what? We're on Instagram at TVBFFpodcast. And we'll see you soon, friends.
Bye, friends.